Paperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
The Media Project, a half hour of commentary and analysis, and on our best days, some insight into the news media issues of the week. Wonderful to have you all with us. I'm Rex Smith, editor-at-large of the Times Union, with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Hi, Rex. I'm working hard trying to figure out what we do if you know what arrives here.
About that, we will have a lot of conversation. Barbara Lombardo, a professor at UAlbany with significant experience as a newspaper editor, Saratoga, the Saratogian and the Troy Record. How are you?
I am fine, I'm happy to say.
This is good. And Ira Fussfeld, a longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and affiliated publications. You doing okay?
I'm doing okay. I'm the publisher emeritus at large. Not at large, just large.
Yeah, at large. What does it mean to be an editor at large?
It means you got to be a little overweight.
Is that it?
Well, no, but he doesn't qualify. I'm a publisher emeritus large. He's an editor at large.
At large. So we're all at large, and obviously the topic of the day has got to be the coronavirus. It is what is on everybody's mind. It is dominating the news and likely will for weeks to come. For us here at a program looking at the media, the question becomes, how is the U.S. news media going to be affected? What's going to be happening as a result of this? And second, how can the media best cover what is clearly going to be one of the major stories of our lifetimes? We're in the midst of something that we've never experienced before, anyone alive today, a pandemic of global scale. So we need to be doing this thoughtfully, but we're doing it from something of a position of weakness, right?
Well, you know, Rex, in every newsroom, in every newspaper, there are gatherings trying to plan for this stuff, and it's almost unplannable in a lot of ways. I mean, for example, when it began, we were hearing stories of, well, if the coronavirus showed up in your workplace, everybody had to go home and self-quarantine. End of radio station, if you think about it for a minute. What are you going to do? So now that seems to be not the case. And it seems to be not the case that everybody would have to go home and self-quarantine if there was one case in your workplace. But every newspaper and every radio station and every television station is going to have to make those individual decisions.
Well, this is a classic good news, bad news for the media writ large. The hunger for information on the part of the public is going to be significant, and people are going to want to get it as much as they can digest from the various kinds of media. And so people are going to be looking for us, and that's going to be great. On the other hand, we are a business, and the business could suffer because as the economy in general declines in the region and in your market, there may well be less advertising. There may be less people able to deliver the paper. And then finally, the greater unknown is to what extent, if at all, is it going to hit your own people? And so if you have a newspaper or a radio station with 8 or 10 people in it and half of them get sick, how are you going to produce the information that the public is looking for?
And the public is looking for information. The other day, I probably made the bad mistake of talking about the Berkshire Eagle in Pittsfield, which had a front page story about several cases in, I think, 15, something like that, in Berkshire County. And, well, if you live in Great Barrington, you want to know if any of those are in Great Barrington,
right,
or if they're in North Adams, where are they? And they didn't have that information. And there was a huge headline today, almost as if they were answering me. And it said something like, information hard to get on the virus.
Yeah, that's a good way for journalists to try to tell readers or listeners that they know that there's an unanswered question, to at least say, we're trying to get it, we haven't been able to get it. I totally agree with everything that you said, Ira, about the business, and that this is also a time where people will turn to their local news outlets, and nothing hits home when you want to say, what does the news mean to me?
If you can get the information, though, I think Alan's example is a good one. It's hard to come by did you just cough?
That was not me this time.
Anyway, it is hard to come by some of the information. And so you actually run into this problem if you as a news organization know that it is in your county, but you don't know who. Or let's say you
can
even...
County's pretty big.
Yeah, county is big. But let's say you can isolate it even more closely, that you know a particular business where it's happened. And again, you don't know the name. You come to a question of invading personal privacy. Usually we don't put out a story saying so-and-so is sick. But if you know who is ill and who might therefore have touched the lives of other people, is revealing that information a public service?
And the way that the politicians are interacting with the media is pretty interesting. I mean, we had Andrew Cuomo getting high marks for telling everybody everything that he knows, and has appeared on virtually every radio station, television station, again and again and again. And yet, there's the President of the United States, I think, and this is an Allen opinion, obviously, knowing that this is poison, didn't want anything to do with it, and dumped it on Mike Pence, the Vice President.
I think you're right.
And
absolutely.
Mike Pence is getting, I hate to say it, fairly high marks for the way that he's handling it. And all of a sudden, we see the President showing up after a couple of days saying, hey, I want some of this too.
Well, yeah, after weeks of minimizing it, after claiming that the media were exaggerating it because they hate him.
And that it was a Democratic hoax.
Right. And this has actually infected, pardon the expression, the conservative claque that follows the president. Fox News commentators, you had Trish Regan, who's on Fox News, dismissing coronavirus as just another attempt to impeach Trump. This happening, you know, just a couple of days before the president finally went on primetime television to say something, at which point, by the way, he began by basically claiming that it's an all Chinese thing, that it's China's fault. So it's kind of amazing. Sean Hannity, of course, did the same on Fox News. It does make you wonder, looking at the Fox News ecosystem and the conservative media, if this might begin to drive a little bit of a wedge between their viewers and Fox News if the reality of this problem sets in with a significant share of the public who heretofore has just believed blindly anything Fox News or the president said. When the reality of this is that it's a very serious matter, what are people going to think of those news sources and of the officials who denounced this as nothing more than a hoax?
Well, Ira, our wonderful esteemed co-panelist here, had a take on my continued assertion that Trump has to be labeled as having said, you know, Democratic hoax. Ira had a different...
Well, I just was pointing out what Trump himself said about that, which was what I meant by Democratic hoax was much as the same as he used to call the Democrats' attempt to get at him via the Mueller report or via impeachment, the great hoax. He believes that the Democrats are trying to use the coronavirus against him as a hoax. I would say in regard to what Rex was just talking about in Fox News, Tucker Carlson has been the one outlier among the nighttime hosts who has, in fact, said it's serious. Let's take it serious. But this morning, and I have not read it, I have to confess, I only saw the headline.
As we say here, Ira, as this morning, as we speak.
As we speak, yes. Margaret Sullivan, the media critic for the Washington Post, former editor of the Buffalo News, her piece is entitled, paraphrasing, Rupert Murdoch has to step in for the safety of the country. It's imperative that Fox News start giving the many millions of viewers straight information about the dangers of this virus and that it is real, which is something that Ingram and Hannity have not done.
Ira, maybe I was taking it incorrectly. I thought you were defending basically what the president
no,
was
saying. No, I will never. I don't think you'll find me defending him too often.
He's always looking for PR people.
I was just trying to explain what he believes the distinction is between calling the virus a Democratic hoax or calling what he says the Democrats are doing to him politically as a Democrat.
So you're sort of his mouthpiece in this case.
I hope I get a check from him.
I flipped on Hannity last night to see how they were dealing with what the president had to say, and I was flabbergasted with how many people they had on, Congress people and their own people, saying how he was so presidential, stepping up to be presidential in this moment of crisis.
Where was this?
This was on Hannity.
Oh, Hannity.
Just for a few seconds that I could watch that.
Hannity may have written the speech.
So then I went to YouTube to watch the speech, which I call a hostage tape.
That's what I used.
And because there's no feeling behind it. He's just reading a teleprompter. And I think as far as the Fox viewers, that whatever he has most recently said, which was what he read, that's what they believe he said, and anything before that doesn't matter anymore.
Wait, let me just understand what you're saying, because I think I agree with you, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
That 90% of the Republican Party, which has stood with him no matter what stupid thing or crazy thing he has said, have stayed with him up to now. And I think I hear some dissonance on this panel as to whether or not this might be the deal breaker.
I don't think it's any kind of a deal breaker.
I wonder if it might happen. I wonder if this might be the time when people begin to say, wait a minute, what's going on here? This particular news outlet has told us this isn't true. These particular sources, Hannity, Ingram, and so on, have said this is being overblown by the liberal media and the Democrats. The president downplayed it significantly and said it's going to be over quickly. And I wonder if, as the reality sinks in, and I think it will, I think we are in the midst of something that's going to go on for months, and that there will be thousands and thousands of American lives lost. And as that reality sinks in, are people going to begin to wonder about the credibility of Donald Trump and the conservative media claque that has echoed everything that he said? I wonder. You know, there have been all these interesting things. We have a conversation this past week about the fact that the Washington Examiner, apparently the top editors, have ordered their staff not to write negative stories about Fox News. This ecosystem that has developed around the untrustworthy right-wing media is kind of trying to support itself. But eventually, you have to wonder if people aren't going to be able to kind of figure out their own reality as their own friends and neighbors die.
Well, people have been waiting for that for a long time, Rex, and they haven't budged off the dime. But when their lives are at stake, it might be different.
But the message from the president now is it's very serious, avoid unnecessary travel, watch out if you're older. He said, Red said all the correct things yesterday. Pence is doing a statesmanlike job. And if the media just complains about, but earlier he said this, or he's contradicting himself, even if all of that is true, it does not bode well for the people's trust in the media. We sound like a bunch of whiny, politicized people, so I'd be very careful about
that. And how do they explain Mr. Rogers himself, Tom Hanks, getting sick, or your favorite basketball team canceling all its games because at least one player, and who knows how many more, have contracted the disease? This is real stuff. People are going to recognize it. And then you add on that the potential huge financial impact that each and every American is going to feel, not only from the stock market, but from as businesses close. I mean, as when they close down the Madison Square Garden for spectators, that means not only are they losing the ticket sales, you're losing hot dog sales for minimum wage employees.
Or Broadway.
And you know, it goes on and on and on. So,
all right. The economic ramifications are enormous.
Huge.
That's where the media's role.
I was going to bring it back to
the media. It's really important. Yeah. I think I should be able to go on my key websites and continue to see updates, live updates on what's going on, what it means to me, what I should do, what I should expect, and what my neighbor should expect from everything from the economy to what's happening in my neighborhood.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And not to make it too parochial, but this is a media show. Think about what the impact of this is on the media business itself. The news media have struggled financially at a time of expansion, slow expansion. That is, we've had these 10 years of growing economy since the recession. But even with that, of course, we've lost 30,000 jobs in American newsrooms. Imagine what's going to happen now as the economy slides into recession globally. What is the impact going to be on our newsrooms?
Of course, on the matter of advertising, we don't really know. I mean, if somebody is about to lose their business, and we've seen some examples of this already, do they buy space in a newspaper to try to compensate for what they've lost? That might be the one silver lining for some of these news organizations.
I don't know.
Not if those businesses are closed.
No.
Yeah.
No, but in order to struggle to stay open, I would say, it's an open question to me, that's all.
I look at it from the perspective of a former publisher, and as we've spoken many times in this program about the corporate ownership at many of the publications now is hedge funds and if a particular property is struggling, has been struggling, but hanging on, if it suffers significantly in the next several months, will the hedge fund ownership pull the plug on it?
Well, it's very interesting. Everybody in this room has something to do with the newspaper, the Troy Record. Rex was the editor once. Barbara was the editor. You were a sister publication in a group, and I write a weekly column for them. So take a look at that. It's a bare, resemblance to what it once was, right? I mean, we all agree on that. They used to have a lot of reporters and things like that, and now whoever's in charge, maybe not even in the same place as the newspaper is, has to come up with some way to fill the property. So I would assume, Ira, that's one of the properties you're thinking about, whether they could survive.
Well, I no longer see the financial statement, so I don't know exactly how everybody is doing.
You know, Ira, come on, you know.
he knows I work for Trump, too. I really don't know the answer to that, but you can only presume if this is a prolonged issue and newspapers suffer, the print products are going to go away. You can always continue to print digitally, and that's one of the great things about digital, both for the newspapers and the technology for example, this radio station. If the worst case scenario occurs and people can't get into the studio, you can broadcast from home. That's something we couldn't rely on 10 years ago. But I just think it's inevitable if this is prolonged and if the advertising hit to an already weakened advertising product is heightened, that there are going to be properties going out cut back on publication days.
And the impact it touches others, by the way, my newspaper prints the Record. So if the Record
and the
stops and the Freeman
and the Saratogian.
So if the ownership of that cluster of newspapers decides to pull the plug on the print edition, that's a significant revenue problem for
that's
the Times
Union.
That's
a great point
that
you raise, where we don't even think about the trickle down in every direction when something is affected.
Well, of course, this is the Media Project. And as much as the three of you people who have worked for, basically a failing side of the media.
still, generally speaking, more lucrative than any of the other.
But still, all we hear are complaints from the people who are running it that it's
still
not enough and
profit.
It's not what it once was. But I can tell you right now that public radio isn't suffering.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that none of your donors are going to stop or reduce their donations if their 401ks have dropped by 20%. You don't think that it's going to have an effect on you?
You know, Rex, that's an interesting question, and I'm going to answer it as honestly and as straightforwardly as I can, which is we've been through this before. We've been through downsides of the market at exactly the time we're having a fund drive, and it hasn't affected us a bit. In fact, I have the feeling that an awful lot of people whose 401ks and other things have gone down are saying, okay, if I got to go down, I'd like to go down with the media that I respect and trust. So we get as much or more.
Well, I wish you luck. I hope that is true. I sure hope that's true.
That's very optimistic.
It's not optimistic at all. It's true. What I told you is true, Ira.
Well, okay. So to all of you out there who are living on fixed incomes and who have watched your 401ks vanish, do not diminish your contributions to WAMC. I think that would be a good resolution.
Another way, please.
Please.
Yeah, we all want that to happen. And what would the impact be on the underwriters if, much like the advertising in print,
trying to tell you that those underwriters, if they have an event, for example, and we know about events, we are hearing them on our underwriting. People who want you to come to something and know what they're facing.
And what happens when the events are canceled?
Yes, that's a problem.
That is absolutely happening. By the way, that's a small but not insignificant element of revenue for news media events. As publishers have had less revenue coming in from advertising, one of the ways they've tried to close that gap is by having events. You know, we have created the Hearst Media Center as part of the Times Union complex, and we have events there. This has been a big part of the New York Times revenue going forward and a lot of other events. And as these events have to be canceled, that is also going to have an impact on media revenues and stuff that, as you say, the trickle down everywhere around the economy as the basketball games, audiences are sent home and so on. One of the other elements of it is that you'll see a lot of publications increasingly trying to push people online. The McClatchy newspapers, for example, including the Miami Herald and the News and Observer in Raleigh, North Carolina, and many other fine newspapers are increasingly trying to push people away from their print product because that is expensive to produce and you have to be there in person to do it. One of the impacts in newsrooms is that people are going to be working from home more. We have told our employees that to the extent that they can, We want them not to even come into the newsroom. Now, people who actually have to paginate the paper and the people who have to run the press can't do that from home.
Well, you can paginate from home, depending on your computer. I used to do that when I was in California.
Well,
it depends. I remember having myself and a couple of editors sitting around my kitchen table with our computers paginating. You don't want to have to do that every night.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a
and
bit
now the pagination at our old paper and in a lot of places it's done remotely.
Right.
So you're creating news in Saratoga or Troy. It's being paginated in another state.
And you want to know what pagination is? Pagination,
right.
In short,
know,
is laying out the paper.
Electronic layout of the pages.
Electronic layout. Designing.
On your screen.
On your screen.
So
thank you for
most reporters and photographers are not going to be coming into newsrooms anymore. Meetings that used to be done in person are not going to be there. And this is happening at newsrooms all across the country very quickly.
So will we learn something from this? For example, your great newspaper, and it is a great newspaper, the Times Union, has a big, might we call it a white elephant, a huge building over there. So when we learn that this can all be done without people coming to work, you know, will they move from the white elephant into a smaller facility?
Well, in our elephant, we have a great big beautiful press. It's just 5 years old, and that production center serves other properties as well. So we're not going to be vacating the plant near the Albany International Airport.
But Barbara's former papers, Troy and Saratoga, both moved to other locations, and I'm certain that the Freeman, my old paper, has been marketed for years and is just never been able to be sold. So
you mean the building?
The building.
But now think about how reporting is going to change. Of course, what we cover is going to change. There are going to be fewer political events. The presidential campaign is going to be significantly affected because people are not going to be showing up. In fact, for several days at least, some of the president's people were claiming that this was a Rush Limbaugh, for example, said this is an attempt by the Democrats to stop Trump from having campaign rallies. This whole coronavirus thing, he said.
Now that's silly.
except that he said, Trump said he was going forward with it until the heat got so bad that maybe not. As I was reminding Ira this morning in an earlier conversation, I had a friend named Elliot, and we used to go into a movie theater, and he would yell at the top of his voice, "Seat apart." Meaning that,
this isn't like my friend Jim from Paris.
Yeah.
Well, the other issue regarding reporters and coverage is, will reporters be able to go to places to talk to people firsthand? Is it safe for those reporters to go certain places? Or on a much more benign level, you see that the sports leagues are denying admission to the reporters to the clubhouses of the teams, and thus the old-fashioned one-on-one in private interviews are going to be going away, hopefully just temporarily. But these are the other kinds of restrictions that may be afforded to newspapers because their reporters can't get around as much.
Right. Well, it began with the sports reporters not being able to get into the locker
rooms. That's what I mean, to the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Right, and the sports teams and the NBA and all the rest, they need the coverage. They want the publicity. They've got to figure out a way to communicate with us.
Although that's a longer discussion for another time. They need us much less than they used to. The size of the athletes' contracts are such that they don't have to promote themselves through the newspapers in quite the same way that they used to. So they generally find the press to be an intrusion. But that's for another show.
It ought to be because I have no idea what you just said.
Okay. It means they don't need us so much anymore.
Because they have their own websites, their own...
They have The Athletic or whatever.
The Athletic does a great job.
Yeah, it's a press release, though. That's what it
is. Well, but the New York Post is still filled with sports reporting, and so is the Daily News.
Daily News has been emasculated.
It's been cut back.
Yeah, but yes, they do. But as we've said often about the Post, it's an exception.
But to Ira's point, the team still, even though the Post is doing its best to keep up with sports, you know, that is a huge reason why people, those who still buy the New York Post, do so. There are these other outlets that are managed by the major league teams themselves.
Yes.
And they hire a lot of journalists,
yes,
by the way.
MLB.com is a great source, and it's supposedly independent, but we'll see.
You're not going to get independent coverage that takes a hard look at, I don't think, that is going to do investigative reporting.
You're not going to critique yourself.
Yeah.
By the way, the Athletic is a legitimate online source.
Right.
The one I was thinking about is the Players Tribune, which is
right,
the Derek Jeter's public.
Right.
The Athletic has said that it wants to hire all the great sports reporters in America. And the question is, that might be good for those sports reporters because they're getting paid, they're getting jobs, the people who otherwise might have been laid off from newsrooms. But if you have all of your sports coverage coming from a central repository like that, it certainly puts the coverage at risk. You know, it could go away then.
The style of coverage anyway. I mean,
yeah.
Guys,
well,
they're also reporters who are trying to make
trouble. They're also taking a lot of the top quality print journalists away from the newspaper.
Yeah, yeah. And if its financial model doesn't work, if it fails, it's going to be a tough time. But
we should point out that Ira was a sports reporter.
Yes, but that was a long time ago. That was three viruses ago.
Well, Ira, once a sports reporter, always a sports reporter.
Well, they're a great breed. You know, it used to be that you could always find your... Well, Ira's a great example. I mean,
yes,
here's a guy
is.
Who started a sports reporter, became a publisher. You would often find editors who would say the best writers are on our sports
Absolutely.
Pages.
Absolutely. I've always said that, not just because you look at the history of people like Jimmy Breslin and who
Rebecca
started
Ringlander.
In sports. Yeah. So
yeah.
You'd be surprised how little interest I have in sports these days. I think the money and a lot of other things has turned me off to sports.
Well, you know, it used to be that sports reporters and athletes would hang out together. They could talk to each other. Actually, it wasn't that long ago. It was 50 years ago when they were almost in the same socioeconomic strata. And now the athletes are superstars and the journalists are not.
Yep.
Oh, well, sad about that. We will have a lot more about coronavirus and a lot of other topics on next week's show. We'll come back to this and we'll see whether we were prescient or ignorant.
I would refer everybody to Angels in the Outfield. See how sports reporters are portrayed there. The great movie from the
19th. Paul Douglas.
Yeah. Amazing.
Wow. I missed that. How long? What year was that?
I was in the early 50s.
The reporters were bad. The reporter was a bad guy.
I was a little too young to be allowed to.
The reporters are always portrayed.
Barbara and I were too young to be allowed to go to the movies in those days.
Thank you, Rex.
Seat apart.
All right. Alan Shartok, Barbara Lombardo, Ira Fussfeld, and I'm Rex Smith with thanks to our producer, David Gustina, and to you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world. Publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.